Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, who is not only the esteemed host of Left of Lansing, but who's also won numerous Associated Press Awards and Michigan Association of Broadcasters Awards in sports broadcasting. And what did that get me? A huge raise? No. Instead, it won me a severance package after 16 years of dealing with dead-end, rotten, corporate right-wing radio. And they wonder why radio is dying? No. I'm not saying me getting let go from news talk terrestrial radio is why the format is dying. Maybe. But it was dying years ago when the corporate forces failed to realize that older, right-wing, white-wing Americans of the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 20-teens were fading away. Corporate radio refused and still refuses to notice that younger people who are more diverse, not just in racial and ethnic terms, but in how they receive their media, is the wave of the future. Legacy media is dead. For example, this week, the state of Ohio, which has turned redder and redder through the last decade, sadly, made an enormous splash, a tsunami-like splash, when voters there saw right through a right-wing Republican plot to take abortion rights away from women. Republicans tried to pull a fast one in Ohio as they put up a ballot proposal which would have raised the threshold to pass a state referendum from 50% to 60%. But the people spoke loud and clear, rejecting that proposal by 14%. Now, that sets up another vote this coming November in which Ohio will decide on whether or not to enshrine abortion rights in the state's constitution, just like we did here in Michigan. It was a blatant attempt by Ohio Republicans to stomp on democracy in the name of punishing women and girls. By the way, AP Votecast polling last year found that 59% of Ohio voters say abortion should generally be legal. That's not surprising at all. We're seeing that all across the nation, even in red states. But this is what the Ohio Republican Party wants to fight for, and they will lose in humiliating fashion. Again, just as the Michigan Republican Party has learned. Former Alabama Democratic Senator Doug Jones, who was beaten and replaced by that racist buffoon former college football coach failure Tommy Tuberville, said in a tweet, "Been seeing these headlines all day long that the Ohio vote is a setback for Republicans. They're absolutely right, but it is kind of sad that a victory for democracy is a setback for Republicans." It is heartbreakingly sad that beating Republicans simply means that it's a victory for democracy. That's not how it used to be. Ohio Republicans tried to kill majority rule, and they got trounced. Like Michigan Republicans have learned, anytime you screw with abortion rights and women's health, you will lose, and lose big. But when that news broke, I rushed to watch the coverage of this massive victory for women's rights and this thrilling defeat of another Republican attempt to thwart democracy and to hurt women. But when I turned on MSNBC, all I was getting for the first half hour of the 8 o'clock show was Trump, 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 Trump. Oh yes, and more Trump. Yes, we know he's been indicted three times. We know that right-wingers here in Michigan were also part of his plot to steal an election. They've also been indicted. But we haven't learned much of anything since that final indictment by Jack Smith. All we have is speculation, predictions, and more speculation. However, what we do have is the supposed liberal cable news network talking incessantly about Donald Trump, which is exactly what Donald Trump wants. I feel like we're getting sucked back into 2016, where I'm waiting for the corporate cable news networks to start showing me Trump's empty podium as they wait for him to speak. You remember that? I mean, this is all a game to them. That's all it is. Yet, the people of Ohio made a remarkable stand, earning a clear blowout victory in the name for both women's medical freedom and for democracy. And I couldn't get that kind of news on the supposed liberal network. I had to rely on social media for all that. We've got some great, bold, progressive policies that are passing here in Michigan. We've got a lot of great, bold, progressive leaders in Michigan. Yet all I'm hearing on cable news networks is Trump, 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 Trump 24/7. That is it. So that's why I say legacy media is dead. And millennials and Gen Z aren't really paying attention to legacy media. I mean, that's why I decided to start this podcast a few years ago. I wanted to try my best to get my progressive message out to those who really need to know that there are more of us than there are of them, which you wouldn't get from right-wing corporate radio and legacy media. And I have to admit, sometimes I wonder if what I'm doing here is helping at all, if I'm doing any good. But then, last week happens when I spoke with a Gen Z voter right here on the podcast. Her name is Jade Gray, and Jade is a digital organizer with Progress Michigan, which fights on behalf of progressive causes, of course. She's a University of Michigan student and also a co-president of the College Democrats on that campus. And here's what Jade said when I asked her what things have to happen in order to get her and many of her Gen Z Michiganders to stay here in the state rather than go somewhere else.
I now know that I do want to stay in Michigan and I do want to put roots down here. And I feel way better about that, knowing that some of my basic human rights are protected and we're at least moving in the right direction on the climate, or we have folks in office who are willing to continue to move in that right direction. I think that Governor Whitmer is doing a great job of letting people know that we can make it in Michigan. And, you know, like you said, of course, there are other things I'd like to see: high paying jobs and accessible housing affordability. And yes, public transportation. Those are all great things. But I do think that Michigan has a great pitch to keep people here. We have a lot of awesome folks coming from all across the country to go to school here, or they're from here. And there's many reasons to stay here.
Hearing Jade there and hearing her conviction and will to fight for progressive causes to make Michigan a better state in the future is what this podcast is all about. They are the future, and they don't care about old corporate right-wing radio. They don't care about Fox News. They're finding ways to news gather, research, connect, and to share information without needing old-time news. When the MSU shooting happened last winter, Gen Z mobilized through social media and pressed for some real gun reform measures to pass here in the state. And the Democratic Party heard them and passed expanded background checks, safe gun storage laws, and red flag laws. That generation has had to grow up with school shooting after school shooting, and they had to deal with school shooting drills. I can't even fathom that. They aren't sitting on the sidelines, especially not here in Michigan. But another issue that you heard Jade bring up there is the environment. And she's echoing a major concern for many younger voters. They want to make sure this country is doing what it can to protect our environment from climate change. A recent Tufts University study back in March shows that while inflation topped their concerns, like most voters at the time, and by the way, inflation is going down by the month, thanks in part to Democrats in Congress and President Biden, the study revealed that for Gen Z, abortion, jobs that pay a living wage, climate change, and gun violence prevention top the list. Young people want to ensure we've got a clean and safe environment in the state. They will fight for clean and safe water to drink and to swim in. And they will fight to protect the Great Lakes, which are under attack by the oil and gas industry like Enbridge, which owns the Line 5 oil and gas pipeline that's stationed at the bottom of the Straits of Mackinac. Like so many other progressives in the state, Gen Z is joining in the fight to shut down that old pipeline from causing irreparable damage to our Great Lakes. We older voters and progressives have to equally fight like hell to help the future for our state and our country to survive for the younger generations. And that's what groups like Clean Water Michigan and the Sierra Club of Michigan are doing. And that's what a group like Oil and Water Don't Mix is all about as it continues in its fight against Enbridge to shut down Line 5. Now, Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer has done what she can by ordering it to be shut down, but Enbridge is countering by fighting lengthy court battles. Meanwhile, The pipeline, which has already spilled 1 million gallons of oil in the last half century, continues to transport 22 million gallons of crude oil and natural gas liquids through Michigan. Enbridge doesn't even care about what Whitmer said. It has simply refused to comply with Whitmer's orders for the last 2 years. Sean McBrary from that Anti-Line 5 group called Oil and Water Don't Mix will join me here in just a moment to share the latest developments surrounding Line 5 and what you can do to help with the effort to protect our Great Lakes. But before I take a break, though, I would like to play this piece of audio because this was important news in terms of the primary race for the Democratic nomination of U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow's open seat next year. Listen.
Hi, I'm Mallory McMorrow, and today I'm endorsing Alyssa Slotkin to be our next U.S. Senator.
That's right. That was progressive Democratic state senator and friend of this podcast, Mallory McMorrow, announcing her support for Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin in that Senate race. That endorsement will indeed give Slotkin some big-time progressive backing at a time when some more progressives in and outside of the state may not be real enthusiastic about a Slotkin campaign. Look, I have not endorsed anyone in this primary race, and I might not, but I will say this to my fellow progressives out there, okay? Now, listen. I'm seeing some of you saying that Slotkin is similar to Arizona Senator Kristen Sinema, who has worked to stifle and destroy her party while in the Senate. But I have to tell you, I'm sorry. I don't see it. I don't see it at all. I'm not saying I agree with every vote or stance that Alyssa Slotkin has taken, but more often than not, I'm going to agree with her. For example, when it comes to raising the federal minimum wage, while Sinema derailed that effort by voting it down a few years ago, Congresswoman Slotkin reintroduced the Raise the Wage Act, which gradually increases the federal minimum wage to $17 an hour by 2028. Slotkin says this will impact over 500,000 Michigan voters. All right, that's pretty good news there. Now, I'm not turning this into a pro-Slotkin campaign or anything like that, but I'm going to give credit where credit is due. What I'm saying is that if she does win the primary, I'd have no problem fighting for her, advocating for her, and voting for her. Again, I will not agree with Alyssa Slotkin all of the time, but she's for abortion rights, a higher minimum wage, and she's for shutting down Line 5, joining progressives like fellow Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib out of Detroit. So between Slotkin and a nutjob, democracy-hating, Trump-loving right-wing loon from the Michigan Republican Party, yeah, I'll enthusiastically vote for Alyssa Slotkin if she's the nominee. And it will be an easy vote. Perhaps the easiest vote I've ever had to make. Well, all right, I'm sorry. I did. Voting against Trump was always easy. Hey, I just have to give a quick shout out to my good friend Rich for his work on leftoflansing.com. Please visit me there for some extra thoughts and musings and for my Friday Left of Lansing shorts. You are listening to LOL.
Listening to Left of Lansing. If the podcast isn't enough and you are in need of more Pat, follow him on Twitter and like him on Facebook. Also, don't forget you can read more of his thoughts and hear an archive of past episodes on leftoflansing.com.
Thank you for all your support on this podcast, which is all about sharing the hard work being done by progressives across the state of Michigan. By listening and sharing episodes on social media or with your family and friends, you are doing your part in helping spread the word on how progressives are fighting for common sense policies and, in the end, for just basic decency. Then in the end, we can all celebrate how the Great Lakes State is a shining example of what is possible in America. Speaking of our Great Lakes, they are an economic engine to our state, helping support over 1.3 million jobs and $80+ million in wages in our state. So protecting one-fifth of the world's freshwater supply is, to put it mildly, quite important to Michigan's environmental and economic benefit. Which is why many citizens are calling for the closure of the Line 5 oil and natural gas pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac, which is owned by Enbridge. Now, this pipeline is old and already has spilled around 1 million gallons of oil in the last century. And even though we had that scare back in 2018, when a tugboat anchor damaged a stretch of the pipeline in the Straits, Then Republican Rick Snyder and his Republican cohorts passed a bill allowing Enbridge to rebuild a new portion of the pipeline, but also to encase it with a new tunnel costing millions and taking a decade to construct. Once again, Rick Snyder always failed on water issues. Yet despite efforts by Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer and Democratic Attorney General Dana Nessel, Line 5 continues to transport oil and gas to the bottom of the straits due to legal fights in the courts. Is the end of this battle nearing, and what can we do as citizens to help defeat Enbridge and remove this environmental and economic disaster from our state? Sean McBrarity is the legislative director of Clean Water Michigan and also the campaign director of Oil and Water Don't Mix, and he's back here on Left of Lansing to give us some updates on the battle to close Line 5. Sean, thanks a lot for coming back on.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, Pat.
Well, Sean, you just heard me give a little bit of an overview about the history of Line 5. Would you mind maybe filling in some blanks and giving some more background when it comes down to this pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Line 5 turned 70 years old this April. It was built to last 50 years. As you said, it, you know, transports about 23 million gallons of crude oil and natural gas liquids every day through the Straits of Mackinac, which has been identified by University of Michigan as the worst spot in the Great Lakes for an oil spill. Now, in 2020, Governor Whitmer did something very courageous and something really in the best interest of the people of this state, which was she ordered Line 5 to close by revoking the easement from the state that Enbridge had to operate in the Straits of Mackinac. Enbridge disregarded that, and right now they're operating in the Straits of Mackinac without a valid easement from the state of Michigan. And as shocking as that should be for a large corporation to be breaking the laws like this, it's not at all shocking, especially for Enbridge. They're actually currently trespassing as well on the Bad River Native American Reservation in northern Wisconsin with Line 5. So I want to start with some developments there. The Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa sued Enbridge because Line 5 runs across their reservation. Back in 2013, Bad River Band decided not to renew their easements with Enbridge. And they told them to, you know, essentially shut down and remove the pipeline through the reservation. Well, that wasn't enough for Enbridge, who continued to operate. And last fall, a federal judge in Wisconsin ruled that Enbridge has been trespassing on the sovereign territory of the Bad River Band ever since 2013. Now, the judge did order a final shutdown date of Line 5, but that shutdown date that he ordered is 3 years from now, keeping the Great Lakes at risk for another 3 years, which is absolutely unacceptable. Not only does it keep the Great Lakes at risk, but the judge has essentially admitted, yes, you're trespassing. You have to stop in the next 3 years. You know, and, you know, some of the things that came out in that trial were absolutely fascinating. When Governor Whitmer revoked the easement, Enbridge started spending a lot of money here in Michigan telling people that they need Line 5. You've probably heard some of the commercials that, you know, that everything would go bankrupt without this one pipeline, which, you know, we've known from the beginning is absolutely false. But the interesting thing that happened in the Bad River trial was Enbridge had to put expert witnesses on the stand. And Enbridge's own expert witnesses confirmed just about everything we've been saying. According to their top expert witness, if Line 5 were to shut down immediately, so if there is a rupture or something that causes the pipeline to be shut down with no time for planning, the impact, according to Enbridge's own expert, on consumers would be about a half a cent increase in the price of a gallon of gas, one half of one penny increase. There would be no shortages, no refineries would shut down because there are already other routes available for that oil.
And not to interrupt you, but this was Enbridge's own expert who are saying this, right? Wow.
Yes, this was their expert witness who contradicted every single Enbridge commercial I've seen. You know, it's almost like when somebody is under oath in court, they actually have to tell the truth. But when they're spending $8 million, as Enbridge did in 2021, lying to the Michigan public, they don't tell the truth.
Exactly. Well, going back to that court case, maybe I was a little confused by it. So the judge ordered that Line 5 had to be shut down. I was under the impression it was just in the tribal area up there in Wisconsin. No, is that ordering the entire line to be shut down?
Well, to the tribal reservation territories that they have to shut down on, are right next to Superior, Wisconsin, where Line 5 begins.
Okay.
So essentially, in shutting down through Bad River territory, they would have to shut down the whole pipeline or be able to reroute it around the reservation in the next 3 years. And that's where things get a little bit complicated. They've applied for this reroute. However, the reroute actually threatens more watersheds and bodies of water than where the pipeline currently lies. And the band is opposed because all they do is put the pipeline a little like upstream on the border of the reservation, still threatening their watersheds. So we have that 3-year time frame from the judge, but we have another thing that we can start working on. And, you know, Governor Whitmer and Attorney General Nessel continue to do everything they can fighting this out in court to protect our Great Lakes and to make sure that we're not going to see an oil spill in the worst place, probably in the world, for an oil spill in the Straits of Mackinac. But in the meantime, you know, we do have this federal government here in the United States, and President Biden has the authority to shut down Line 5 tomorrow if he wants to. Now, since the pipeline crosses an international boundary when it goes into Sarnia, Ontario, they need a presidential permit to be able to operate the pipeline since it crosses the international border. Now, presidential permits can be revoked for any reason or for no reason. With Enbridge operating in Michigan without an easement, actually actively trespassing on the sovereign territory of the Bad River Band, and the fact that they don't carry financial insurance for the pipeline, so a spill here would fall on Michigan taxpayers, President Biden has everything he needs from a policy perspective to shut down this pipeline. And so we're not sitting here with the Oil and Water Don't Mix campaign waiting on the courts to give us a solution. We're putting pressure directly on President Biden to stand up for his campaign promises on climate and protect the Great Lakes by shutting down Line 5. And people can take action at oilandwaterdontmix.org. We have a way you can contact the president on there.
Sean, have you or I suppose any ally of yours on this issue or any member of Congress had contact with President Biden's people when it comes to this?
Yes. You know, so I've had meetings with White House staff. Others have had meetings with White House staff. Some of the organizations we work with have also met with State Department, with other relevant agencies at the federal level. And we've given them a lot of information. They have the information from the court cases, and, you know, the White House kind of seems to be hemming and hawing over whether or not to take action here. And I think it's important for progressives in Michigan to realize that we're here in a swing state with an election coming up next year. You know, I think especially to young voters, we've seen how important climate change really is to young voters.
Yeah.
And Biden, frankly, has a ways to go there. He, by approving the Willow Project and approving the MVP pipeline, he hasn't really been standing for his environmental promises recently. And this is a good way for him to take action and show that he understands this situation. And I think it would be something that would also be a draw to us progressives here in the state of Michigan if he shows that he really cares about the Great Lakes by making sure a foreign oil company can't spill oil in them.
Right. And I'll say this on the Biden administration. I think that they have in some ways shown more seriousness in wanting to tackle climate change and wanting to protect our environment. But as you just pointed out, there are other times that I think the Biden administration is falling short and disappointing some of his more progressive, and not even just progressive, just people in general who care about the environment, that he's also leaving them out to dry a little bit. But is it because of this whole Canada issue? Obviously, Canada is one of our trading partners. They're our friends up north. Is it because the Biden administration just doesn't want to ruffle any feathers with them? I mean, I haven't heard any Canadian officials say that they want the pipeline closed. In fact, I don't think they want it closed at all, especially the Trudeau administration. Really haven't heard them say that they want the pipeline closed. Seems like they all want it open up there.
They, at this point, do want it to continue. And they're actually, the Canadian government is being pretty disingenuous on this whole thing. They've tried to invoke a treaty from the 70s. Carter and Trudeau's father signed during the gas crisis of the 70s to try to keep Line 5 open. The plain wording of the treaty says that it doesn't apply here. And the other piece of logic, you know, is Michigan and the United States have signed other more longstanding treaties than this one. We have the Treaty of Washington from 1836, where the tribes of northern Michigan ceded most of the land that created the state we live in today. And in exchange, they reserved hunting, fishing, and gathering rights. And the fact that this pipeline is being allowed to operate, the fact that they're thinking, even thinking about building a tunnel, an oil tunnel underneath the Great Lakes with climate change advancing as quickly as it is, you know, are also clear violations of treaties that we've made with tribal governments that actually allow us to exist as a state. And I think it's time we start honoring those treaties before we start looking at this disingenuous use of a never-before-used treaty with Canada from the 70s.
Okay, and that is why Enbridge is trying to keep this in federal courts.
Well, no, the treaties aren't why they're trying to keep it in federal court. They're trying to keep it in federal court because even though it doesn't belong in federal court, they think with former President Trump stacking the bench in so many places, they have a better shot at winning. They frankly shouldn't win this in any court in the United States. However, Attorney General Nessel's lawsuit to shut down Line 5 firmly belongs in state court. And recently, the Sixth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals agreed to hear Attorney General Nessel's appeal to get that case moved back into state court where it could actually be litigated.
So a small victory there.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that has the potential to be a very large victory.
Okay.
But again, in the meantime, I know a lot of people on this issue, since this has been going on for so long, I know a lot of people get frustrated with the speed of the courts here, or the lack of speed, rather, of the courts. And again, this isn't something, you know, where I think people should be sitting on their hands and waiting. We're looking down the possibility of a major oil spill in the Great Lakes from this pipeline. And we're violating the promises that we made to the Anishinaabe people that allows Michigan to become a state. So I really think that instead of sitting on our hands and waiting on the courts, we need to be pushing the federal level to take action. And I know some of our congressional representatives have also been having some of these conversations with President Biden's administration, and they really do care about and understand this issue.
Is it more on the Democratic side of the congressional delegation here in Michigan?
Yeah, it is more on the Democratic side. In fact, it's kind of solely on the Democratic side. You know, Senator Peters has been a big advocate on this issue. Representative Tlaib has been very, very helpful and very outspoken about needing this pipeline shut down. And our own here in Lansing, Representative Slotkin, also, I think, really has a unique take on this issue. She's been calling for Line 5 to be shut down because it's a national security risk. You know, to destroy the watersheds of Lake Michigan and Lake Huron, unfortunately, one wouldn't even need a bomb. All you'd need is a boat with an anchor in the Straits of Mackinac. She sees the national security implications of that pretty clearly. So we've had some help from the Democratic side. We are continually pushing our members of Congress to do more and to leverage this issue with the Biden administration and to get them to take action here.
So, Sean, I know you brought this up a little bit earlier. I want to get back to it. And that is the scare tactics from Enbridge and from supporters of Line 5 and Enbridge, saying that closing down Line 5 will cost citizens in the UP since they rely on the pipeline for their propane. Don't you dare cut that pipeline because that will hurt the people in the UP. But I've read that most people in the UP rely on anything but propane and that there are other ways we could get propane to those who need it up there in the UP.
The UP, we're talking about 123,000 households total in the Upper Peninsula. Now, Enbridge likes to claim that, and they haven't claimed this in a couple years, but they used to like to claim they provide 65% of the UP's residential propane needs. So 123,000 households in the UP, roughly 23,000 of those rely on propane for heat. About 12,000 households total, and this is going back a few years because we'll talk about how the market's changed, but going back a few years, 12,000-ish households relied on propane that was delivered through Line 5. Now, Enbridge doesn't, you know, drive the propane to people's homes. Enbridge is a middleman here. So the propane distributors in the UP have largely moved away from using Line 5 and from relying on Line 5 because of the instability going on with whether or not the pipeline is going to continue to be open. To supply that 12,000-ish households maximum that Enbridge was providing with propane requires 1 to 3 truckloads a day from Superior, Wisconsin, down to Rapid River in the UP, or it's 1 to 3 train cars a week. So it's a very small amount of propane. The distributors in the UP and the market have already started moving away from reliance on Line 5, and they're going to only continue to move in that direction. And then on top of that, one of the good things that the Biden administration has done and that the Whitmer administration have done have been, the Biden administration has not been great on stopping the expansion of oil. They've been pretty decent about bringing money in for renewable energy and for energy efficiency and things like that. So the reliance on propane, especially with the federal and state dollars being invested, is only going to go down from here. And again, they've already started transitioning away from Line 5. So there would be no anticipated propane shortages either from this pipeline shutting down.
Right. Well, and I guess that's the point that drives me batty at times is, regardless of what happens, why would the state of Michigan and all of us really want to continue to invest in this energy source that we are ostensibly trying to and beginning to divest in altogether?
Absolutely. And we need to divest from oil and from natural gas and burning fossil fuels for energy. This summer has already been the hottest summer on record. Most of the hottest years on record are in the last decade. You know, this is a situation that I think, especially we've seen young people really get the existential threat of climate change and take it seriously. And we need a lot more of that. We need to start realizing that we can't keep relying on oil because it's literally killing us.
You know, that is the second time, Sean, that you have mentioned young voters and how much importance that they put on the environment and how the environment is an important election issue for them when they get to the polls. I take it you are hearing a lot about the environment from Generation Z voters.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the Line 5 campaign, recently we had folks show up for public comment at a Michigan Public Service Commission meeting to talk about the Line 5 tunnel plan. And we probably had 10 folks under the age of 18 show up and sit through a Michigan Public Service Commission meeting, which are not the most entertaining meetings in the world, you know, in order to sit there for a couple hours in order to share their opinions on why we need to shut down this pipeline and not allow Enbridge to build an oil tunnel. And I thought, having that many young people under 18 show up and write public comments to share was just really inspiring. And we're seeing a lot more of that. Youth really understand this issue, and young voters specifically. I think it's something that, especially as Gen Z gets older, it's going to be something that keeps driving young voters to the polls.
Also, something that I've been hammering home here on this podcast this whole year is, if we are really focused on trying to keep young people here in Michigan, I would say keeping the environment clean and keeping the Great Lakes clean would be a good start. And that's exactly what it seems like that they're saying.
Yeah, there's things everywhere can do better. Generally, this is a great place to live, and we want to keep the Great Lakes clean, free from oil spills. We want to keep investing in our infrastructure so that we can continue to thrive into the future.
Hey, Sean, since I've got you here, I just want to ask one more question. I was wondering if there were some other water issues in our state that you wanted to briefly address. For example, the latest general budget signed by Governor Whitmer the other week, we learned that nearly $600 million has been set aside for Michigan's water infrastructure, protecting access to drinking water, replacing lead service lines, rebuilding sewers, and even more. I was just wondering if I could get your take on that.
The governor has made a really large and worthwhile investment, as I think it's a good start for what we need. You know, studies have shown that we need roughly $1 billion a year for our water infrastructure in order to get out of the D and F rating from the American Society of Civil Engineers. We need to be making $1 billion investments annually for the next 20 years. Governor Whitmer, with this budget, has done, I think, has made big strides towards getting there. You know, I think one of the things that we're really going to need to see is revenue reform in order to make the size of investments that we actually need to be making. And when I say revenue reform, I mean progressive revenue reform, where we're actually taxing the rich appropriately and taxing corporations appropriately to pay for the things that we all need. And then, you know, one other issue going on in the legislature, which complements this, is that I'd love for folks to stay tuned. You know, there's been a big push for water affordability legislation. Right now, 1 in 10 families have water bills that the Environmental Protection Agency would define as unaffordable. And so we're working with various stakeholders across the state to bring forward water affordability legislation, which could guarantee that Michigan families all have affordable water to drink. The infrastructure side makes sure that water is safe and clean, but we need water affordability legislation to make sure it's affordable for everybody.
Optimistic it will pass?
Well, I think water was a key issue in getting this legislature elected. And I think if they didn't pass something like this, their constituents might notice going into 2024.
Precisely. Okay, Sean, if people once again would like to learn more about oil and water don't mix and they want to get involved with closing down Line 5, all they have to do is go to oilandwaterdontmix.org. And if they would like to learn more about the Clean Water Action, how can they do so?
Yeah, find me at cleanwateraction.com/Michigan and you can get involved there.
Sean McBrady of Clean Water Michigan and campaign director of Oil and Water Don't Mix. Thanks again for being on, Sean. I greatly appreciate it. And thanks for all the work that you're doing to help keep our Great Lakes and water as pristine and as affordable as possible. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Pat, thanks for having me. Thanks for all the work that you do to get these issues out here. It's a great podcast.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
The importance of closing down Line 5 and in keeping our environment and our water clean is of the utmost importance for our state, for our country, and for the entire planet. We just experienced the hottest month ever recorded. And as I exasperatingly said to Sean there, I just can't understand why in the world anyone would support keeping an aging pipeline operational under the Straits of Mackinac at the expense of what makes Michigan a popular destination for many to visit and to live. I mean, the right wing has this odd way of claiming it is anti-corporation and that it's pro-worker, yet it's not joining the progressive movement and stopping any kind of future investments into an energy source that we and the world are beginning to divest out of. And why? Why isn't the right wing joining us on this front? Why aren't the Republicans? Well, that's the focus of this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. I know that there are fishing enthusiasts out there who are big-time Republicans. Why aren't they joining us in trying to save and preserve the fishing industry in our Great Lakes? Why would they be against closing down Line 5 to ensure that our way of life here is preserved, which will help lead us to a further prosperous Michigan? When then-Governor Rick Snyder and the Republican legislature passed that bill in 2018, giving Enbridge the right to build a tunnel over that 70-year-old pipeline that'll cost somewhere between $300 and $600 million to build, who would celebrate such a reckless and short-sighted bill? Now, Enbridge and the Republicans then promised that taxpayers wouldn't foot the cost of this tunnel. That's what they say, but if there's an accident during the construction process, I think you and I both know who will end up paying. You know better. But there's no need for something we don't need, nor will need in a decade. Oh, and I forget, thanks to Snyder and the Republicans, Enbridge would then own a 99-year lease on the pipeline. How grand. I mean, Snyder rewarded Enbridge, despite the Enbridge pipeline, which broke and caused one of the biggest inland oil spills in U.S. history, when 1 million gallons of crude oil caused citizens and businesses to evacuate along the Kalamazoo River in the summer of 2010. You remember that? And some of those people never came back. And we still don't know how long that oil pollution still remains at the bottom of the river. And let's not forget how Enbridge's own workers damaged supports along the pipeline in 2019, but that the damage wasn't discovered until a year later. No, they want you to forget that. They want you to forget how the pipeline was ordered shut down at that time, too. But the Republicans and Rick Snyder said, don't worry, nothing to see here. We all can trust Enbridge. Again, as a progressive, I don't really put up a whole lot of trust into corporations or corporate welfare, which begs the question again, where are the Republicans now? They supposedly want to hold corporations accountable, but all I'm hearing on this front are crickets. It's sad that they don't take the environment or environmental safety or environmental justice seriously when we're dealing with record heat, wildfires, powerful storms, and rising ocean waters. They don't take it seriously because their base has been programmed not to treat it seriously, or that it's some kind of evil, worldwide, liberal, progressive plot. I mean, here, just listen to Republican Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina's ridiculous answer when it comes to climate change.
This is ridiculous to talk about a climate emergency when we have a border emergency that is an existential threat right now. So,
you see how they know their audience. They know how programmed their audience is to be more fearful about the southern border than climate change. You see, we can do more as a country to help deal with climate change, but all Tim Scott can say is, southern border, southern border. Because you see, that's a trap phrase for the right wing, and right wing money people have spent a lot of cash on having their followers be more scared of the southern border than climate change, which is an existential threat, Tim Scott. Heat kills more people than any other weather-related disasters. But unlike a tornado or a hurricane, heat simply doesn't look good in pictures and video. You just don't see it. But the right wing has been taught to fear immigrants rather than something that's actually and really hurting our daily lives. And by the way, why is it wrong to deal with both the southern border and climate change? Why can't we do both? But the good news is, as you heard Sean McBarity describe, younger Michiganders are helping lead the way and are joining in the effort to fix our environment and to fight for our environment. They care about where they live, and these young people care about preserving the places and resources that make our state attractive across the country and the world. I mean, think about it. In those old Pure Michigan ads, I remember images of our lakes, rivers, parks, and vibrant cities. I just don't seem to recall shots of a dangerous 70-year-old pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac, which, as Sean noted, University of Michigan scientists called the worst place for an oil spill to occur. So by all means, let's put a pipeline there. And let's give it up one more time to Michigan's Democratic congressional delegation, including Senator Gary Peters and Congresswomen Rashida Tlaib and Alyssa Slotkin. We need to close down Line 5 as soon as possible. And as usual, it's up to progressives to get the job done. We could wait on Republicans to join us to do the right thing, but we know it will not happen. It is up to us.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
All right, another episode. Episode 49 is in the can. On episode 50 next week, I'll talk with the Michigan Libraries Association as they are starting an initiative to fight back against groups who are trying to ban books. That should be a good one. Now, in closing this week, I'd like to say so long to a couple of gentlemen who passed away. Robbie Robertson, lead writer and guitarist for one of my favorite bands called The Band, passed away this week at the age of 80. Robbie wrote classics such as The Weight, Up on Cripple Creek, and The Shape I'm In. And as I wrote on Twitter, or whatever you want to call it, this is what I said, that I heard The Weight on my parents' Big Chill soundtrack on cassette tape back in the day. Didn't exactly get what the lyrics meant as an 8-year-old, but the music still moved me in ways that I could not describe. Robbie Robertson's music, especially with The Band, always had that effect on me. Rest in peace, Robbie. And I'd like to say goodbye to former Detroit Tigers player and longtime broadcaster Jim Price, who died this week at the age of 81. Born in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Jim was part of the 1968 Tigers World Series Championship team, and then he moved into broadcasting, where he worked in the radio booth since 1998. And look, I'll keep it real. Jim didn't really have the talent of an Al Kaline or a Paul Carey when it came to color commentating, but he still made the spot his very own. And he and Dan Dickerson, I have to say, became synonymous with those World Series runner-up teams of 2006 and 2012. And Jim Price always showed his love for the state of Michigan, because it didn't matter if you were from Redford or Reed City, Monroe or Manistee, or Ann Arbor or Alpena, he lets you know that they were all nice areas. My email is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Please contact me if you'd like to share any news stories or comment on anything I've said here on the podcast, or if you just want to say hi, that's fine as well. As always, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.